This morning I kind of wanted to look at the life of David, but it turns out that he's not here this morning, so I can't really make an example out of him. So, no, actually I was talking to Josh and Ariana last night, and they were asking what I was going to preach on. And I think I was going to talk about the life of David, and Ariana goes, "Why would you want to talk about David Banalis?" And I was like, "Well, there was this other David I was kind of thinking about, but I mean, I guess I can pick on him." No, but anyway, I wanted to, I guess, focus on the way David's life unfolded. And to do that, I'm going to step back a little bit and give you a history of Israel. David, you know, is anointed king of Israel, and then he eventually becomes king, and there's a whole bunch of stuff associated with that. But before that, I kind of just want to recap some of Israel's history, just because I thought of Monty Python when I was thinking about this, and I had a good laugh, so we're going to share that moment. Go all the way back through Abraham, and God promises Abraham descendants and land and so on and so forth. And so Abraham moves in faith, and he goes to where God is calling him, and he sees some of his promises fulfilled, and things continue on from Abraham on down the line through Moses and through the Israelites and the deliverance of the Red Sea. And then we come to a favorite portion of mine, Judges, which is really the whole reason I bring this up, is because in Judges, what's happened is that the Israelites are in need of a leader. Did I totally do this backwards? No, I didn't do this backwards. But the Israelites are in need of leadership, and they felt that the best way for that to happen would be to have, like, one appointed leader. They thought that, you know, that would be nice. So one leader shows up, and they listen to him, and then eventually label him a heretic, and then, you know, the whole thing burns to the ground, and they end up, you know, in the same situation they were before. They're desolate people, and they're lost, and they don't know what to do with their lives, and so they pray to God for a new leader. And so a new leader springs up, and we have this other judge who now presides over the Israelites, and then the same process happens, and he eventually leaves, and the people eventually return to their former ways. And after that one dies, you know, the next one springs up, and that one fell into the swamp. And so then another one comes, and he falls into the swamp too. And eventually, you know, we just end up with all these judges who come and go. And Israel does not find a sense of stability. They continue a cycle of repenting and turning to God and seeking him for his provision. And then they fall away from that, and they go and seek their own things. They worship idols, or they just forget God and his blessing and his promises, and then they have to be called back to it. And this cycle happens again and again, and it doesn't end in Judges. It happens throughout the kings and even through the prophets. And probably to this day, the Israelites are still waffling back and forth. But anyway, besides the point. So Israel comes from this history of having to muster up faith to believe in God, and then having that faith challenged and faltering and stumbling, and then coming back to the faith, and they go through this cycle. It's somewhere in this mix after, you know, there we end up with the king. And this is where we come to David. David is a shepherd who is the youngest in his house, and he's, you know, just kind of the slave boy. And any of you youngest children, you would know, and me being a middle child, I would know from the opposite end of the spectrum, where I would be the one imposing all the punishment and whatnot. But anyway, David comes as, you know, the last one who's not even considered. A prophet comes to his father's house, and he says, "I'm here to find the next king." And he's got, you know, 12 sons. And so he says, "Great, how about this one?" "No." And he goes through all 12 of them, and each time there's not it. And there's something that God is looking for specifically that the prophet does not see in any of the other ones. So Nathan gets to the end of the list. Is it Nathaniel? I'm sorry. I didn't write it down, and I don't actually have it in front of me, so I'm being a poor, poor pastor today and not reading it correctly for you. But anyway, so he gets through the line of sons, and he says, "Nope, none of these guys are it. So do you have anyone else?" And they say, "Well, yes, there's David. He might work." So they go out and they bring David in, and Nathanael says, "Yes, he's the one." All right. So then he anoints David as king, And then David the next day steps into his full glory as the new reigning king of Israel, and then continues to preside over the people, and everything is happy, and to this day there reigns prosperity in the land. So as you guess, that's not exactly what happens. David is anointed king, and then nothing happens. And so he ends up going back to what he was doing before. And it's a long time between the time that David is anointed king and the time that David becomes king. But there's a lot of things in between there that build up to David becoming king. One of those being Goliath and the servitude there, where he goes out to fight Goliath. And my grandma was talking to me this week, and this is kind of why it comes into play here, about how her pastor was speaking last week about the brothers and the sons of Goliath, that Goliath wasn't an anomaly in the world where there was just one giant, and then as soon as David defeated him, you know, that was the end of it. David's story does not have such a happy ending all the time, and David's story is not so clear-cut as to only ever have one trial to overcome. And I want to emphasize that point because we have that same predicament facing us. There comes one trial after the other, and defeating one giant isn't the end of the whole brood of them. And you may have troubles coming your way afterwards, even though what you did was a monumental victory and was making good roads toward progress. So David's life resembles that process of victory and trial and defeat. And we talk about David a lot, and everybody says that David was a man after God's own heart, and so that he's always remembered as this great man for that very reason, that he sought after God. And I think sometimes the meaning of that gets lost, and it's not that David had anything special about him other than the fact that he continually sought God, even in spite of having to keep continually overcoming things. And in the midst of all of his trials, he still manages to do that. David, as a king, doesn't have an easy life either. Not only does he sleep with Bathsheba and end up, you know, cursing himself and things like that, but he ends up getting into trouble with the previous king, Saul, and he's, you know, chased by sons, and people want to kill David pretty much all his life, and so he's always running from somebody, and that's how I feel sometimes, I guess. But we have that same tension about our lives where things come against us continually, and there's never a point where things will always be set from here on out. There may always be trials like David had, and I mean to encourage you by saying that, and it comes from the deepest point of love to let you know that you may always have hard times and trials, and you may always be ill at peace unless you grab hold of this one thing, which is where I think David is kind of crucial. That David, in spite of everything, always came back to God, and he always got on his knees, and he always prayed, and he always expressed in his angst, in his sorrow, in his fear, in his pain, he always came back to God, and he always found room to trust and believe that God would deliver him, that God would heal him, that God would rescue him and save him from the things that he was facing. But beyond that, David also strove to get beyond the things that were facing him. And I would be wanting to read just as an example of this in Psalms 3. This is David is fleeing from Absalom, his son, who is trying to overthrow his own father's kingdom. He's trying to take control for himself. And so in this situation, David says to God, he says, "O Lord, how many are my foes, and how many rise up against me? Many are saying of me that God will not deliver him. But you are a shield around me, O Lord, and you bestow glory on me and lift up my head. To the Lord I cry aloud, and he answers me from the holy hill. And I lie down to sleep, and I wake again, because the Lord sustains me. And I will not fear the tens of thousands drawn up against me on every side. Arise, O Lord, deliver me, O my God, and strike all of my enemies on the jaw. Break the teeth of the wicked. From the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessings be your people, be to your people, be on your people, rather. And this, I think, is just a powerful depiction of a man who trusts God and a man who believes in something bigger than his own circumstances. And we find that same tension around us where things are hard, and it would be easy in David's situation to give up on God. I'm finding that, you know, in situations, you always expect the easy button. You know, the Staples commercial where they're like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. We're out of paper. It's okay. Easy button. And then, you know, all of a sudden there's thousands of piles of paper. They got this new one, though, where his mom and daughter are in the store and they're shopping for this dress. And the lady says, that'll be like $400. And she goes, how much is it now? And the lady goes, that doesn't work here. It's still $400. And I think sometimes we expect the easy button to always just solve everything. We're like, oh, crap. We hope that the easy button is always there. And there's always like, well, we're like, I could get $30,000 into debt. And then I've always got God. So easy button, right? You know, you just get out of it. Or, you know, you expect that like, oh, I just tension at work and I'm about to get fired. Easy button. Now I'm the CEO. It doesn't exactly happen that way, and that's the unfortunate part. But in spite of the fact that David never had an easy button, he always had peace, and he always had something to hold on to. He had, I guess, an element of virtue and faith and trust and just belief beyond what seems rational. Sorry, reasonable. He manages to remember God in whatever he's facing. It doesn't matter how bad it is, whether he screwed up or whether somebody else is intentionally trying to screw things up for him. In all situations, David continually comes back to God to remember that God is a healer, deliverer, what have you. Whatever David needs, God is there, but it's not always the easy button. He has to strive for things. He has to be persistent in pursuing the peace of God in the face of, you know, having people kill him. David lived homeless for a while, and by homeless, I mean he wandered the caves of Israel trying to avoid people, you know, coming to kill him and rob him and do a whole bunch of other stuff that, you know, nobody wants to face. But David never lost sight of the fact that, you know, God had better things for him in mind and that God would deliver him. David shows signs of repentance and regret and remorse for his life, and he realizes a time or two that he wasn't exactly the valedictorian, and he wasn't the employee of the month. He didn't exactly always do what God wanted, and because he didn't do everything that he wanted, people, you know, obviously have the notion that you must do things right, you must score well in order to receive rewards. But David never reflects that. David doesn't ever think that, well, you know, I guess it turns out that after 30 years sleeping with that woman and not really taking care of my family, I guess I pretty much deserve this. So God, might as well just send him on down. My head's right here. Just go ahead. Just, you know, David never gets to that point. He always trusts that even in spite of himself, in spite of the stupid things that he's done, or in spite of the things that just, you know, happen in the course of his life, he is always able to reach out to God and to believe that God doesn't care about those things so much as he cares about his own son, so much as he cares about us, so much as he cares to see us delivered from pain and sorrow, not just pain and sorrow from the rest of the world, but pain and sorrow that we bring upon ourselves. And that, I think, is important for us to remember. We oftentimes are our own worst critics, and we oftentimes feel that, you know, the trials and things that we face, if not directly brought on by us, are probably deserved because of, you know, another attitude or another way in which we have messed up and have earned the right to be condemned and burned alive. And yet, if you remember Josh talking a couple weeks back about standing in the fire, it's hard to do. It takes a lot of faith to walk into a furnace 7 times hotter than normal, where 2 guards burn up just in the process of trying to throw you in there. And to believe that God is with you, that God is going to save you, and yet he saves Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He shaves them. I'm on a roll today. By the end of the service, I'm probably going to say something pretty weird and end up on YouTube. Actually, I could go for that. Anyway, so we end up in serious predicaments sometimes. And, you know, as if you remember that scene that Josh had shown where Ricky Bobby's screaming, "Oh, my God, I'm on fire. Put the fire out, Oprah Winfrey." He's, you know, screaming to whoever to try and get the fire put out. And, you know, as Josh was so kindly reminding us that God sometimes doesn't put the fire out, but you make it through, that you can sometimes walk out of there unharmed. And it's hard because you see flames around you and it smells an awful lot like sulfur and you wonder why you're in this handbasket. But you have to remember that God is with you and that he will not let you stay stuck, and that he's not up there smug, as you know, in the idea that, yeah, finally got what's coming to him. That looks like that's going to hurt. Watch, this is going to be good. Ready? Watch, here goes the arm. And then, you know, God just has like a, you know, a whole like play-by-play commentary on all the bad things that are about to happen to us. It doesn't work that way. God has good plans for us. God knows the things that he has in mind to prosper us and to see us do well, to save us from the things that have come to kill and destroy us. Jesus didn't come for anything other than to restore us to a relationship with God and to redeem mankind from that chaos, from that disorder, from the things around us that plague us. And though still in this life we have trials, we have God with us. And I guess that's really the point I'm trying to get to. And what David exemplified was that in everything, he had God on his side. And God never deserted David. God always was with David. And that's hard for us to remember, hard for us to internalize, because that was David and not us. And that was back in the day when God really spoke to people and when God really did things like, you know, light bushes on fire and turn water to blood. And, you know, those days are not gone, but it's hard because we see little of it and we feel little of it. And around us is just an atmosphere of lifelessness, of despair. And as much as I like pointing out Ecclesiastes and reminding people continually that there is no hope and things like that, I think that sometimes it's misguided and sometimes it's just unwarranted the way that I can kind of cling to that. And it's my own sick pleasure that makes me do that. But regardless, Ecclesiastes is kind of irrelevant to the topic, and so I apologize for bringing it up, but God is with us, and things are not hopeless, and things are not in despair, and we are not alone, and we are not meant to suffer in sickness and death and destruction and dissatisfaction, and our lives are not meant to be a chaotic delusion that things are better than they are or that they will be better, you know, just as soon as I win the lotto. But there is a sincere and genuine honesty that we can have about the fact that God is with us and the things we suffer are not suffered in vain, but that God has a plan for redemption and God has a plan for vindication, for justice, for righteousness that will favor us. And it's imperative that we hold on to that. It's important and necessary that we truly believe that whatever is in front of us, that God is with us and that things will work out okay. It's hard and we get nervous about things. Trent, I don't mean to pick on you, and I'm going to pick on you because I had to suffer with you, and Mitch as well. This morning was a bit of a challenge for us because it's not something that we were comfortable with doing, to get up and worship. Though we're all capable musicians, there's still a lot of fear because we didn't have our fearless leader with us this morning to cover up all of our mistakes and to take the brunt of whatever commentary could be headed our way. But in spite of that, we managed to worship, and we managed to forget for a moment our fears. Well, maybe we managed to forget them, but we managed to lay them aside at the very least. And we entered into worship, trusting that what happens, happens, and that God is with us, and that He will sustain us through what happens, and that at the end of the day, that's what's important. It wasn't whether or not we hit all the right notes or that we kept tempo perfectly. It was that we worshiped God and that we were with God and God was with us. And that, I think, was crucial to our lives. And David, when he was facing hard times, when he was facing his Goliaths, when he was facing the Absaloms of the world trying to kill him, that he held on to faith and he held on to trust and he persevered and persisted through trials and tribulations that ought to have taken away his hope and robbed him of his joy. So I kind of just wanted to recapture David's life in a way that brings hope, brings encouragement to the fact that God is with us, that we are not alone, that we do not suffer in vain. And I know that this is something that you hear quite often, but I just think that in the midst of what's going on in the world around us, whether it be, you know, just jobs and life and social disorder and economic stress or what have you, it seems futile without God. There has to be that element of God that allows us to persist. There has to be a force of will inside of us, willing to hold on and to pursue things and to believe that we can change the things around us to make the world a little bit better of a place, and to believe that God will do even more so. And that as we continue to walk things out, as David did, as we do not run from being king, or we do not run from Goliath, though he did run from Absalom. Sorry, that's a... But just holding on, just having the tenaciousness to grab hold of God and to believe Him and to trust Him in the face of what's going on, and that knowing He will, in fact, vindicate you. That is what He promises us. He will, in fact, rescue you. He will heal you. He will bless you. So, you know, we have to hold on to that and believe it, trust it, and live it, and walk it out. And the things that we're facing, we know that we may not be able to run from the fire, but we know that we may walk out without getting burned. And Lord, I thank You for the life that You've given to each one of us, God, for all of the blessing that You've bestowed upon us, Lord. And I, though, am mindful of the dangerous situations that we face, whether, like David, we are facing a giant who would stop us from something, or whether we are facing an army who would seek to destroy us, or whether we're facing a boss who wants to bring us down, or a friend or family member who is breeding dissatisfaction, mistrust. Lord, I pray that whatever situations we are facing, that You would be with us, that You would remind us constantly of Your perseverance in spite of the things going on. And I pray that we would have the strength to persevere and to endure and to be able to stand the fire. Lord, it's easy for us to panic, and it's easy for us to become afraid and to doubt and to let go of our faith in those situations. And Lord, I pray that even from beyond the grave, You would instill in us faith and trust and determination to believe that You are with us, that You are working for us, and the things around us that do cause turmoil in our life, that we would walk through those things, so that we would be victorious, and that we would receive Your blessing, Lord, that we would receive the promises that You gave to us, that You would bestow upon us things greater than the trials we face now, Lord. I pray that You would Bring your provision to us, God, and that you would make known the realities of your blessing and of your promise in ways that we have not yet seen, but ways that not only just give us a good warm feeling inside, but satisfy our need for justice, that satisfy our need for healing, that satisfy our need for peace, our need for love, and our need for security, Lord. I pray that you would manifest these things in all of us this morning. I ask your blessing on us this week, and I pray that you would just fill our days with goodness and joy and mercy. In Jesus' name, amen.